It is the first post-playoff game edition in Canucks Talk show history.
Not just a playoff
Let's
game.
Let's go.
Though. That playoff was not just win. A playoff game.
That's true.
It wasn't just a playoff win. That was like a special moment.
It was.
That was a special moment, man. You know what? I do this a lot. I talk about this a lot. You know how I talk about like the... Your show was great. Loved your community theater performance of Oliver Twist. And you know that the person's not genuine, but they love you and they're being kind, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then there's like, oh man, I didn't know you could sing. Deeper in your register.
Yeah.
To a man, Canucks players coming up and discussing that atmosphere, discussing that crowd, genuinely moved. Genuinely moved. Like, you could tell. You could tell. JT Miller comparing it to, comparing it, albeit like
putting it in third place.
Putting it in third place with a bullet behind the birth of his kids and his marriage, but his wedding day, but nonetheless, genuinely moved. And in the room, like, he spoke so softly, like it was a completely different tone than you usually see from him. The smile on Tyler Myers' face when he was asked about it, you know, Dakota Joshua's memorable, you think you know what to expect and then you don't. And then Quinn Hughes discussing sort of the lows, right? Like the idea that in part it was so special because this team has had big playoff moments in an empty building in the past, right? This team has played in front of a hostile crowd, frankly, right? They've had jerseys thrown on the ice and been booed and seen the environment turn mutinous. And then last night, just this full-throated celebration capped off with an exclamation mark by those two goals in 12 seconds, excuse me. The second of which, you know, when you get a second goal and the building's roaring like that, you know, you feel like the crowd had an impact on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just an, so yes, it's a playoff show. It's a playoff win show,
mm-hmm.
But more than anything, it's sort of coming off the high of what was the first really special night of hockey that this city has seen in, and, you know, people will say like 9 years, but it's like, I don't know. I covered that series 9 years
when
ago.
When was the last really feel good playoff moment? Probably like Alex Burrow scoring in game two. I mean, they won game five too, but like signature moment, because it didn't happen in 2012 or 2013.
No,
they didn't have. And I would argue it didn't happen in 2015 either. Like there's no like, oh, you'll always remember that moments from those series.
Absolutely not.
So it's been even longer than 9 years. Okay, it is Canucks Talk. I'm Jamie Dodd. That's my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Trantz, also covering the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your text in. We're on an hour early. We're doing a bonus hour as we are throughout the Canucks playoff run. And boy, did it get started in a big way last night. So let's get right into the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily playoff deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 22nd. The headline, of course, is the Canucks win 4-2 against Nashville. Take that all-important 1-0 series lead. But really, and you mentioned it, and we talked about it, but I do want to just give it a little bit time to breathe and dig into it. The number one headline for me is the fan experience, the atmosphere at Rogers Arena. First and foremost, like that's what we've been waiting for. That's what we've been wanting, expecting, hoping for so long. It lived up to the hype and then some. It looked like an absolutely phenomenal experience. And again, the existent, not just a win, not just a big win, a comeback win, all of those things, but a true signature, you'll remember that moment with Dakota Joshua scoring the game winner 12 seconds after the tying goal. I wasn't there. I wasn't in the building. You were. But from watching it on TV, it looked just like absolute pandemonium all night. But that moment in specific.
Yeah. Yeah. The crowd didn't get discouraged. You didn't get that, you know, nervous energy that a Vancouver crowd you know, can get in the playoffs.
No, I actually was really impressed. Even when they were trailing, the fans were super into it.
That building,
they brought it.
That building was on its game last night, and yeah, exploded. I mean, there's no way that the television can capture the way that the building, like the press box, legitimately was like rumbling. Mm. You know, I've never been in the building when it's been that loud ever. The crowd was a factor, period. And just honestly, it's one of those things like I'm buzzing afterwards because it was so cool to be a part of. And, you know, Canucks performance deserves its flowers. I thought the Predators played well, especially in the first half of the game, right? They're like, it was a fun matchup, but it's the crowd, it's the environment, it's the atmosphere that made it special. And then that Joshua goal elevated it to a totally different stratosphere. You know, that's why we do this thing, man.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, fitting, and we can get it. We got a 3-hour show. Gemma Carson-Smith, Allison Lucan are going to join us at different points in the show here. But obviously, we got a lot of time to get into different things, get into kind of some of the tactical things we saw, what we expect to see for the rest of the series. But definitely fitting, I thought, that it was Dakota Joshua who scores the ultimate game-winning goal. He adds the empty netter as well, because I won't say he was the best player on the ice or anything for the Canucks, but he was certainly a standout. And for somebody that we've talked so much about, okay, he could have that type of impact, right? What type of X factor could he be? Could he have this kind of breakout on the national stage in the playoffs? That's kind of exactly what we all thought it might look like, right? Like, he was a physical force. He was so engaged. And then he shows off his improved finishing, his hands around the net for an absolutely massive goal. And what a debut, right? And I think you just think about, you know, where Dakota Joshua was at the start of the year to where he is now and what a key part of this forward group he is. And if the Canucks are going to keep going, if they're going to keep winning in the playoffs, if they're going to go far, he's going to have more nights, maybe not quite at that level, but he's going to have more really, really good performances for this team, just like he did last night.
So that Lindholm line in general, right, played Ryan O'Reilly very well. I mean, the Predators' top of the lineup was dead quiet. 9-plus minutes for the Forsberg-O'Reilly-Nyquist trio, and they had one shot on goal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that came, like, it wasn't a hard match. It was kind of a soft match. O'Reilly saw a fair bit of time against both JT Miller and against Elias Lindholm. And, you know, the Canucks scored two goals head-to-head in Lindholm versus O'Reilly's minutes, but they scored two goals on three shots. And I think we'd look at that first goal certainly as one that's not a chance the Predators are going to be, like, sweating
about. No, no.
You know, even if it's a shot that I'm sure Saro saw in his sleep last night. So, you know, I don't know that it was like overwhelming, but just how active Garland is, especially, but Joshua too, the way that game turned once the Canucks started to frustrate the Predators' breakout, how crucial Joshua and Garland in particular were to that effort. And then the fact that Lindholm, you know, the assertive checking game, the just positional soundness. I mean, obviously his best game, he gets the goal too. He creates the turnover on the winner. So, you know, a really nice start for a player who, as we discussed, right, wasn't going to be judged until now.
Yeah.
And
as Tockett said after the game, right, like, hey, this is what we acquired him for.
Right.
You know, that last month of games, not what they acquired Elias Lindholm for, right? These are the games where they got Elias Lindholm, and early returns, very, very positive. And I think even more than Lindholm's individual play, just, you know, Patrick Alvin talked about it on the station yesterday, even, right? The strength down the middle and the fact that Rick Tocchet clearly trusts that line and views it as a weapon, views it as a tool he can use to solve problems. Now, not that he wouldn't necessarily view it that way with Teddy Bluger, but it just gives you that extra bit of depth. And, you know, I think we can get into it, but I thought there were some interesting things in terms of the usage of some of the forwards, right? Like, Pettersson's on a line with Nils Höglander and Sam Lafferty, but he plays like 6 minutes more than them at 5-on-5, right? Whereas, so I think there was not necessarily shortening the bench, but you saw the gap between the forwards that Tocchet really, really trusts and really likes and wants out there, and maybe some guys who are farther down the pecking order. And Lindholm's clearly in that first category as somebody that Tocchet trusts, somebody that Tocchet wants out there in specific situations. And the production is key. He needs to do more of that. But I think just that factor, giving him another weapon, another tool, is huge for Lindholm as well.
For sure. And we'll get into the Pettersson thing in a bit, because the one of the stories of the game for me was at the top of the lineup, Vancouver handily won the matchup, right? Like, mm-hmm. 5-on-5 all game long, and especially actually in the first 40 minutes. Like, to some extent, Nashville was able to eat away at that even before the Canucks goal. Like, the Canucks sort of scored on maybe the first heavy shift that they had at the top of the lineup in the third period. But the way that Hughes and Miller dominated, especially the 5 minutes that they spent on the ice together in the first 40 minutes, was something to see. I mean, it was like perfect two-way game territory, and the Canucks still entered sort of the third period trailing, largely because Nashville got a power play goal. The top of the lineup matchup went soundly in Vancouver's favor, and that sort of brings up the rest of it, which is where it kind of gets interesting to me in terms of what this series will look like going forward. There's some obvious adjustments for the Predators to make, some obvious ones for the Canucks to make. I'd expect them to make them based on how prepared both teams appeared to be and how they attacked one another's weaknesses in game one. I thought there were some edges for the Predators down lineup.
Like where?
I thought once they loaded up that Sissons line with Evangelista and Zucker,
mm-hmm.
I thought that line began to really trouble Vancouver. They didn't play Tommy Novak very much, and they leaned too heavily on McCarron,
yep.
who ended up being JT Miller's most frequent.
And that feels like that's going to be a one-off in this series.
Well, but here's the question that I have for you is, if that enables O'Reilly and the sort of Sissons line with Evangelista and Zucker on it to maybe control play against lines lower in Vancouver's lineup, is it something worth considering? Certainly it wasn't something Nashville ducked last night.
Yeah, it wasn't, but I don't think they can be happy with the results of it, right? Like, I think you were giving way too much space to JT Miller to do his thing out there.
Miller dominated, but he didn't score his goal in those minutes. Like, that, you know, when Miller was on the ice for the 5-on-5 goal, it was the Tommy Novak line that was Nashville's fourth by a mile. On the other hand, if you're playing Novak that little and McCarron that much, does that take
some offensive punch away from you, that you need.
Does that take your big edge in this series, which is how you generate scoring chances, and sort of mute it, right? Or at least turn it down on the dial. That's sort of the main thing that I think the Predators will have to figure out. And then for the Canucks, this whole game turned when Vancouver's forecheck started
absolutely.
To play.
Yeah.
Because and actually it turned before the end of the second period. It was just hard to notice because Vancouver was taking so many penalties, right?
The beginning of the second period was really strong for the Canucks.
And then
it got completely derailed by the penalties.
Right.
But it was easy to look at that and say, okay, they found their footing here, right? There was a span late in the first where it really turned into a rush contest for a few minutes there, and that felt like Nashville doing what they wanted to do. And it wasn't as if the Canucks were getting like carved up by them necessarily,
but it
just wasn't the style of the game the Canucks want to play.
I think for the first half of the game, Nashville was able to dictate the pace. Like, the tempo of the game matched Nashville's stylistic preferences as opposed to Vancouver's for about 30 minutes. And it was actually funny, the moment the Canucks took the lead, it was like Canucks hockey was back. The moment they took the lead, it was like the recognizable stuff, the script that Tocchet's devised. Like, it was template stuff from the Canucks for the last 10 minutes of the third period. But almost until that point, it felt like a style of game that I don't think the Canucks, not that they're uncomfortable playing it, I don't think they were, but I don't think it's what they want.
No,
typically.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't as if it was like, uh-oh, Nashville's really taking it to them, and they're on the ropes here. It wasn't their style of game. It wasn't the type of game they wanted to play.
No,
Predators dictated
the pace.
As soon as it turned into that, and again, I think even before the Canucks got in front, because I think it happened at some point in the second period, and then they kind of reestablished it early in the third period, they looked a lot more comfortable. And I do think coming out of that game, and this isn't necessarily a surprise, but it feels like in large part, the series is going to be decided by that kind of tactical matchup. The Canucks forecheck against the Predators' ability to break the puck out. Because I think we saw they can do it when they're on their game. They can break that puck out and get the puck, retrieve the puck, and get it going the other way really, really quickly.
Well, they kept getting a guy in behind. So the moment possession changed, or even before, the Predators send one guy deep, and they kept catching the Canucks on that stretch pass in the first 30, 40 minutes. And I think the Canucks adjusted and did a better job containing that particular aspect of the Predators game. Then it's just the discipline with which they move as a group, especially off of neutral zone turnovers, into the offensive end. And it's four guys. It's fourth man's ice almost every time. And that's where the rush chances for the Canucks came from. And I think the Canucks were almost surprised. Honestly, I think the Canucks were like, whoa, this many rush chances. It's been a long time for them. And so their execution wasn't sharp with the puck. I liked the JT Miller line, though, that there might as well not have been a puck in the first period. Because it did sort of feel like that a little bit, right?
100%.
But, yeah, I mean, the stylistic matchup there is fascinating. Like, I thought the Predators did a ton of smart stuff. I liked the way that they fronted on point shots. Now, it cost them in the third, but they are really trying to turn Vancouver's proclivity for relying on point shots to generate offense from like a dangerous chance for them to fear into turnovers. Like, they're trying to block them and use them to hit the Canucks on the counter fast. Like, that's what they're trying to do. They didn't really capitalize off that in the first game, but I'll bet they liked how it looked. I'll bet they think that if they keep that up, it's going to matter for them. I thought the way that they forechecked, like, they didn't come at Hughes and Hronek on the forecheck as hard or as deep as they did against Vancouver's second and third pair, which is something I've been wondering if we'd see a team try all season. And finally, we see the Predators, like, legitimately forecheck differently against different Vancouver Canucks defense pairs. I thought that was sharp. And despite that, I think we saw Quinn Hughes get hit more times last night than we have in any other game all season, which is another part of that game that I think the Predators, when they think about it and meet today and prepare for tomorrow, will say, hey, we didn't get the result we wanted. It was close, but we like that, and we need more of that.
It does. It's interesting because, you know, I think you've said it. Both teams played pretty well, right? And even when the Canucks were still trailing 2-1 before that, you know, the 12 seconds and the two goals, I was kind of thinking watching the game, and I was like, I don't feel particularly bad about how the Canucks have played. I don't feel like, uh-oh, I picked them to win this series and now they're really in trouble. I liked a lot of what they were doing. And I will, like, I hear what you're saying about Nashville. Like, hey, they kept it close. You know, it's just game one. It's on the road. So if they get the split, they'll still be really happy. But I also kind of feel like, you know, they got the first goal. They had the lead going in to the third period, which has been, a question mark for the Canucks, how they would respond in the playoffs in those scenarios, given some of their struggles to generate offense consistently. So they had the lead in the third period, and they won the special teams battle, scoring that power play goal, not allowing the Canucks to score a power play goal, and they lost the game. And I feel like it's going to feel like a bit of a missed opportunity for Nashville, right? That they were in that situation and they weren't able to get to steal game one on the road. Now, that's not to say that the series is over, right? Like, I think you saw a lot of the reasons why this could be a long series, why these teams are, you know, it's going to be a fascinating matchup. But if I'm Nashville, it feels like they had a chance to lock that game down and really make a statement. A bunch of things went in their favor, and they weren't able to take advantage of it.
You thought a bunch of things went in their favor?
Well, specifically, them scoring first and taking the lead into the third period.
Right.
Right, against a team that hasn't always been at their best in that situation where they're chasing
sure.
the game. And then they won the special teams battle, too. Right? And you get both of those things, and you're like, okay, I feel pretty good about this. They didn't take advantage of it.
But they didn't, they won the special teams battle, but they had an extra 3 minutes of power play time and couldn't, like, in some ways, Vancouver stemmed the bleeding late in the second period because their penalty kill held the fort, especially after that O'Reilly goal, right? It wasn't just the goal itself. It was that O'Reilly also had an open backdoor pass. Like, there were two 35% options for him in that moment. That was as severe a breakdown as you can see. By the way, I do think they were right to not challenge
100%
for goalie interference.
100%
frame by frame. Like, I got sent an image by a source anyway, who not like a league source, but just like an interested hockey guy watching it. And the puck is past the glove at the point that the stick makes contact. It is bang, bang. That was a gutsy call by Crawford and Clark to not challenge it. I liked Talk's honesty, yeah. That saying that he was swearing to make sure that they were certain. But yeah, I think they did get it right to not challenge it, but that was such a severe breakdown. And then to immediately bounce back and be as imposing on the kill as they were thereafter.
Well, and even the funny thing was the first shift of that penalty kill that they get scored on, they were really good. And now it was Bluger in the box, right? So it wasn't Bluger and Lindholm out there, but it was Lindholm and Joshua.
Lindholm with a really strong sequence. And they were great.
Like the first 40 seconds of that PK, it's like, okay, this is awesome. And then it all fell apart. But then they reestablished the penalty kill after that on the other sequence of penalties they had to deal with.
So honestly, though, to come back to our original point, which was, things went Nashville's way and they missed their shot. They might have, but on the other hand, if I'm Nashville, I'm looking at it and saying, I'm probably not going to get another game, frankly, where all of Josi, Saros, and Forsberg are that ineffectual.
Sure.
Like, that's probably the floor game from my three best players. And we lost by a goal plus an empty netter, right? So not a clear defeat.
Mm-hmm.
In their barn, and we were 10 minutes away from getting it done and arguably had maybe our best period before they get, you know, the Hughes goal and then, or sorry, the Suter goal. It has officially been changed to Pugh Suter.
Yes.
And then, yeah, so Pugh Suter and then obviously Joshua 12 seconds later. It's like they got blitzed in a moment, but I think they should be pretty okay with how they played, especially given that their best players didn't really show up. And especially given that Vancouver's 5-on-5 edge, was largely the product of like 6 minutes in which the Predators for some reason played McCarron against Miller head to head.
Okay, there's lots more to get into from this one, obviously, and we will do it over the next 2.5 hours with the bonus hour here of Canucks Talk.
We doing any whiteboard stuff?
Yeah. Don't worry, I'm not wrapping up.
Okay, good.
Broadsheet, although not really a rumor when it comes directly from the source, but just I'm looking for reasons to include the broadsheet in the whiteboard now. Patrick Alvin on the pregame show last night with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah here on Sportsnet 650. And the notable quote from Patrick Alvin that they have paused negotiations with their UFAs going in to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that's no surprise, right? As interesting as we all find, the offseason forecasting and all that, what's the team going to look like, the armchair GM stuff, the focus is now on what can this team do in the playoffs. Having said that, how much have we talked about how much money Dakota Joshua can make for himself in the Stanley Cup playoffs? And boy, he got off to a really good start. A really good start doing that last night.
Oh, yeah. I had a conversation with a front office source today, and they were just asking me, like, what did I think, you know, various Canucks players would probably get on their next deal?
Mm-hmm.
And we got to Joshua, and, you know, his guess was 3.5 to 3.75 over at least 4 years. And I thought, you know what? That sounds about right. So, yep.
I think if the GM in question was watching the game last night, yes. You know what I mean? Like there's going to be a GM who sees those types of performances and is like, I need that guy and I'm willing to pay for it.
Well, among them, I hope Patrick Alvin, because the Canucks need that guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, like there's no, I don't know about that. I don't know if they should do that one. Like, not only do they need that guy, but I'm pretty confident that he can play higher up the lineup than he did this season and still return value.
They're already almost using him. It's the third line, but if you look at the distribution, like, he played way more than guys who were in the top six, like Nils Höglander and Sam Lafferty, right? Like, they're already finding ways to get him out there more.
All I know is, personally, I have very little appetite to find out what life for Garland looks like without Joshua, or to find out what life for Joshua looks like without Garland. Sometimes you just stumble into like two players who seem to like, even that pass. So even the Joshua goal, he's like drifting into the against the grain chance. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's literally moving the way that's going to pull Saros before he gets the puck. And Garland just sort of puts it on, like, the level of, they clearly had the exact same idea in their head because they've done it so often all season. it's unbelievable how much synergy there is between those two right now. Just awesome.
It's fantastic. And again, it's an incredible weapon to have for Rick Tocchet on the, as he said, technically, the third line. Lineup notes, Canucks back at practice today, 12:30. So that's obviously during our show. So we'll get you the update on what the lineup looks like. I mean, they win game one. So we'll see about changes. I think the Sam Lafferty spot is the question, but we can have more discussion about that later.
I don't know if we're going to see much. It sounds like it's a quick practice that's like really a meeting. So we'll see sort of exactly how much the Canucks do in fact show us. But yeah, no, curious to see if there's any changes. That second line's a question.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. We'll have more time to talk about that, but certainly one of the bigger questions coming out of that game. Playoff forecast, NA. You got anything of the betting odds?
What do you mean, NA?
I'm going to have to we have to come up with a new mini segment because they're in the playoffs.
Right, but their odds of advancing.
Are they updating
changed?
At The Athletic? I don't know. I guess I don't know if they are. Tell Dom L to get his, his button gear.
I'll start asking. Anyway, I've got gambling odds. The Canucks are -165 favorites to win game two, which is better odds than they had to win game one, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were somewhat less than that. Over under is set at 5.5. Remember, penalties get called more early on in series and then go away as the series gets deeper. So work your way to those playoff unders. And then I just wanted to bring this up. The Canucks to win the series are now at -310.
Woo!
So that win convinced a lot of gamblers anyway that and Vegas itself that the Canucks are heavy favorites. That's a 75.6% implied probability where they were at closer to 60% before their game one victory.
So now I think officially overwhelming favorites or heavy favorites, let's say. They were always heavy favorites. What am I looking for? Overwhelming?
I think 60-40 is like clear. Use clear favorites.
All right, clear.
And now at
heavy?
75% will go heavy.
All right.
I think you need to crest 90 before you're overwhelming.
Overwhelming?
I think so.
All right, that's the official scale. So we're on heavy. We're heavy on the scale.
I've always been heavy on the scale.
Absolutely,
my friend.
Me too. All right, that is the whiteboard for today. Gemma Carson-Smith joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.